Up next on Downtown, multiple Emmy Award-winning comedy writer. She wrote for shows like That Girl, The Monkees, Room 222, He and She, and of course, for what I think is one of the great shows in the history of television, The Mary Tyler Moore Show. We had a wonderful time talking with her last year as part of our 50th anniversary special. And this time around, we welcome back the great Treva Silverman, but on a sad day, to talk about the passing of the legendary Ed Asner at the age of 91. Hello there, my friend. How are you?
Hi. It's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you. It's wonderful. Wonderful to talk with you. I've missed talking with you, although I've enjoyed our online communications. But this is a sad event to talk about the passing of Ed Asner, who was, people throw around the term larger than life a lot, but it certainly seemed to apply to him.
Very Renaissance man also. It's interesting that I was thinking about when it's Ed, it's let's say your aunt dies. All you really have of your aunt is you have every single memory, and you have a whole bunch of still photos. But I've been watching a lot of Mary's. I've been watching him, and it's so hard to separate that he is gone, and yet I'm watching him being emotional and being scary, and it's hard to really, really take it in. But yeah, a major loss in so many ways.
Do you remember when you first met Ed?
Yes. My first, I saw him on, after I started, we started writing the Mary Tyler Moore Show about 8 months before it went on the air. Oh, no, it wasn't that long. But we started writing Mary Tyler Moore Show before we saw the pilot. So I didn't know what he looked like. So there I was, writing about him. And when I saw the pilot and when I first met him, my first thought was, he's just adorable. He's adorable with all his blustering and hard looks. He was absolutely adorable. I wanted to mention something to you. I was thinking about this. After a whole bunch of the first season, my girlfriends would start asking me, is Ed Asner married? Because he's very sexy. And I thought so, too. And I said, yes, he's happily married. And so I told Jim and Alan about this, and they said, sexy? What? They absolutely didn't believe it. And, well, he's overweight. And, no, I said, I'm telling you what my friends, I'm telling you from a woman's point of view, this man is sexy. they didn't quite get it.
It's just so interesting. When we talked with Gavin McLeod last year, he was telling us that they had originally envisioned him after he had read for the part of Lou Grant. And he said, I can't do that. First of all, I've worked with Mary before. I love Mary. I couldn't be her boss. And I'm not sure the part would have worked. And now we look back and you can't imagine anybody else other than Ed Asner as Lou Grant. And part of it is that he was able to walk as an actor that very fine line between being that gruff, hard-nosed guy, but you could see through that to the love and respect he had for Mary.
I always have thought that it was so sensitive of Gavin to say, I'm not the Lou Grant type. And then he said, I'd like to read for Murray. It was his decision. And, oh, okay, sure. And that's how that happened. Also, that when Ed auditioned, he could tell that he gave a lousy audition. So he was walking out the room, and then he came and he said, I did a lousy job. I'd like to read it again. Under the pressure, it always knocks me out to think about that, because under the pressure of auditioning, which is so hard, I mean, writers have an easy time in one way, which is we're behind our computers. We can rewrite, we can cross off and delete, but they both were under the pressure, and they both had the sensitivity, the nerve, and had the nerve to say, I can do it better. Hear me out, I can do it better.
And he told us the story of how part of the rap against him in a lot of quarters was that he had done all these roles as heavies, and that there were some people who didn't think he could play comedy.
Yeah. At the beginning, it really took for Jim and Alan. It really took a lot of vision for them to realize, no, he can do this. The network was not so happy about it before they gave permission and everything, because he had been doing roles in which there was no sense of any kind of softness underneath the toughness. It was just tough and fearful. It always amazes me when something turns out right. 2 billion chances for it to turn out wrong, or just misunderstood or mistaken. But the idea of the show without Ed, it's pretty incomprehensible. Gavin, such a lovely guy, and so well suited to being Murray. It's interesting how Jim and Alan thought, or actually Ethel Winan, who was the casting director, that Ethel thought of him as Lou, not to even mention that. I right now I've been reading a lot of the write-ups about Ed Asner, and mostly going yeah, and there was something there about that he had been offered bigger roles, but he said. At the time, he said it was the best role he had ever been offered, and he really, really wanted it. You said something about working with Mary. Also, what I've been thinking about is that for Lou Grant is interviewing Mary for his associate producer. And her answers. I mean, it's a wacky kind of interview. I mean, her answers, and then the getting it one under the answer, and all that. But for Lou Grant himself, as a living, breathing person, to recognize that underneath all those crazy kind of answers and her shyness, that there was somebody capable. I mean, because he was running a show, and for him to have the perception, perceptiveness to know that Mary Richards would be an asset was very sensitive of him.
We're talking with Treva Silverman here on Downtown. Well, Ed proved his ability as a comedian, a comic actor, right in that pilot episode with the brilliant timing that he showed in what's become one of the most iconic lines in the history of television. And a lot of laughs in those first couple of seasons, but I thought a real turning point in the development of the Lou Grant character came, I think, in season two with an episode you wrote, The 6½ Year Itch, when Lou discovers that his son-in-law is cheating on his daughter.
Oh, you know, not that I've almost forgotten about that, but that's so interesting that it's about, I didn't even think of that. Why don't you recollect it a little bit for me?
Well, what I liked about that episode so much is that he's obviously initially incredibly angry at the young man, and then also doesn't want his daughter to be hurt. And he handles that situation with such kindness and compassion and grace. And I thought that was really, when we began to see, we'd seen the funny side of Lou Grant, then we saw the real humanity of that character and the struggles that he was going through as a dad, as a husband, as a man.
And in his recognizing that if he takes a gruff, harsh tone with his son-in-law, it's not going to work. He's just going to sow dissension between them. Where he sees his son-in-law as a guy, and he talks to him in understanding kind of guy stuff, so that the message gets through, but they're still friends.
And then you came up with the idea of having Lou and Edie break up and what was such a powerful, not just episode, but story arc for those characters.
Thank you. What we were talking about before about so many opportunities for something to go wrong and what a celebration it is when something goes right. It came out of a talk. I've been doing a lot of Marys, and very often Jim and Alan would, I say it like it's one word, Jim and Alan would say, we need something for Valerie. But this time they said, well, you've done all these episodes. What would you like to write about? And without even thinking it over, I said, I would like to see Lou in some kind of pain. We've always seen him be the gruff drinking companion, but underneath, we don't know what lies underneath. We don't know anything about that, and we haven't really seen him in an intimate relationship thing. So out of that came the idea of suppose they have to separate, which would not only give an opportunity to show all the different sides of him, but I think it was the fourth year. So that would be 1974. And it was exactly dead center of women's groups and women seeing who and what a woman is besides being a wife and all that. So it was very, very much of its time. It's one of those luck things. I mean, had it been 1954, it would have been. She decides to not use a frying pan, but to bake instead. I mean, it's all context, as everything in life is. It's all context.
I was reading Jennifer Cation Armstrong's wonderful book on the making of the series, and she talks about the fact that over the course of doing the series, Ed Asner, not Lou Grant, but Ed Asner, the person, really became a feminist, and how much of that was being around so many strong, independent women, well, like yourself.
I didn't know at the time really who Ed was. I mean, I had my own life and et cetera, et cetera. But found out much later that he was so intensely political. He was so intense an activist coming out of his strong beliefs, and once he got fame, once his name meant something through Mary Tyler Moore and through Lou Grant later on, he decided that he could either just be an actor and keep his opinions to himself, or he could be an activist. And he decided, hell or high water, he's going to be an activist, even if it affects some fans who say, no, no, I'm a conservative, I don't like this guy, mouthing off. And he was a big supporter of the ERA movement, lent his name to it, campaigned. Later on, my God, he was president of Screen Actors Guild, SAG. Mm. He was president, and that's a tough presidency. It's a 24-hour a day thing, which you can't do for 24 hours a day. And he was very ardently against capital punishment. He was big on gun control. There was a big thing happening in Screen Actors Guild where they were going to take some they had already said that they were going to take some action that would do XYZ, but incidentally would cut health benefits for older SAG members.
Right.
And so he was. Oh, he might have talked. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, you surprise me so much, because sometimes I'll be talking about something, and you'll already know all about it and all the footnotes. you just know your stuff, Mr. Rich.
Well, it's you talk about his activism, and in some ways, he would go on to say that it probably cost him a TV series. Lou Grant was going great guns, getting wonderful ratings, great critical acclaim as well, but speaking out against El Salvador apparently pissed off the wrong people, Bill Paley being one of them, and that series was off the air, but he would rather speak his mind and stand up for what was right.
Was it Bill Paley? I always wondered. I had read that at that point, it was 1983, I think. At that point, the Lou Grant series was always in the top 10, and top 10 thing out of the blue. I think hardly anybody outside of Ed would have continued to do that. And it was so brave, and it was so courageous. That's one thing. It's so hard to be in the public eye and not have your goal to remain untarnished. Mm. God, when you think about, not particularly now, but a number of years ago, even like 10 years ago, somebody is coming out as trans. Oh, my God, they can't do it. It'll ruin their career. That wasn't his. He was attempting in a very authentic way to have it both ways, to provide a balance, but not to shut up. And if it had repercussions on his career, so be it.
Treva Silverman with us on Downtown. You and I were chatting online the other night, and it was 3 months to the day after the passing of Gavin McLeod. And what a tough year it's been for the Mary Tyler Moore family with Gavin and Ed, and then back in January, Cloris Leachman and Alan Burns passing away as well.
Yeah, this year has really taken its toll. Cloris and then Gavin talking about Cloris, Gavin and Ed talking about Cloris. And then when it happened with Gavin, and they were such close friends, and Ed put out a statement saying, "Now it's just you and me, Betty." Mm. The two of them were the only ones remaining. Alan Burns is, for me, a whole different part of my heart, because Alan was, well, when I was saying Jim and Alan, with little hyphens in between, Alan was, if there would have been no Jim, if there would have been no Alan, there would have been no Mary Tyler Moore because it was the two of them. They were so beautifully aligned, and Jim has said and continues to say that Alan brought the sweetness and the niceness to the show. I don't know if I entirely agree, because Jim is a powerhouse on so many levels, but I'm just quoting him.
I'm trying to remember the story. I hope I remember this right. Wasn't it Alan who said to you when they decided to make Georgia Engel a regular on the show, wasn't it Alan who told you should be the one to tell her, since you had really created that character?
Yes. Oh, what a lovely memory you have, especially if it's something nice about me. Actually, not about me, about a story that I told you about Alan. That's right. I had created the character of Georgette, and when I brought the script in to Alan and said to him, he said, "Who do you see? Do you see anybody?" And I said, "Yeah, George Engel." And he said, "Great idea." And when she scored such a wonderful, dear entry in appearance the first time, and they decided to put her on, not just that one time, but as a semi-regular, it was Alan's sweetness and dearness and Alan-ness when he said, we want you to tell her that she's a semi-regular because it was your idea to cast her. That's I guess that's, in its way, what Jim meant. Alan was one of my closest friends and one of the few people on earth who has an incredible marriage, in that they married extremely early, and they both did, well, they did what is so impossibly hard when you marry really early, particularly in the their generation, where things changed and changed and changed, and they changed along with it, and they grew along with it, and they grew closer. Before January, when it happened, I had been meeting them for dinner over the past years, and it was the kind of marriage that everybody hopes they will have in their older years. But I saw them during their middle years and their beginning years, and they were so much a part of each other's changes. Alan, ..
Mm. Well, you know, we can't claim to have known Ed well. He was on the show with us several times. We met him when he was in town doing a play, and we had planned to bring him here to do one of his one-man shows back in April of 2020 when COVID hit. And I just communicated with his daughter, Liza, a couple of weeks ago about trying to reschedule. And he was going to work with a couple of my high school drama kids in the play.
Oh.
And so, you know, even though we didn't know him well, I feel like we missed out on that opportunity and missed out on the chance to just talk with him some more, because it was always such a wonderful experience. But it's so good to talk with you again. I'm sorry it's under such sad circumstances, but any chance to talk with you adds a little sunshine to our day.
How sweet. Thank you so much. And for me the same.